Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nate Grootniblink. I'm the creator of Apples and Genos, originator of the Zero-G Draft Strategy, and in this podcast, I'm going to go over the most puzzling players league-wide as submitted by the Apples and Genos Discord server. Let's get it. Welcome in, welcome in. We already got Toronto Dave in the chat. Good to see you, buddy. As per always with puzzling players, if you got a puzzling player and you weren't able to get them into the Apples and Genos Discord server when I put out the call earlier today, you can definitely throw it in the comments here and I will absolutely get to biz on that. Tyler Wilson's in here as well. Toronto Dave dropping the 0G. Random reviews in here. Let's go. Well, let's go. Let's do that. Let's get into it. Let's talk first off about Arturi Lehkonen, most requested player with the news today that Valeri Nichushkin is making his way back from the NHLPA Player Assistance Program. Good to hear that he's deemed himself ready to go. But what does this mean for Lehkonen, right? What can we divine from this news? What does it mean for the fantasy purposes? So first off on Nichushkin, he's obviously not going to just immediately step right back into the lineup. It's going to be a little bit of time there. He's not traveling on the road trip here. It's only a two-game road trip, so it's not too long, but he's not going to travel with the team on the road trip. He's going to take some time, get himself back up and running. Meanwhile, Lehkonen was practicing this morning on the top line with MacKinnon and Rantanen, so in the short term anyway, you got good deployment here for Lehkonen, but long term you do have to wonder what they're going to do with the lines here. And honestly, I kind of feel like I'm in a very similar place with Lehkonen and as I have been all season. You had to think that this was potentially coming at some point, that Nichushkin could be back at any point. That's probably going to be a net negative for Lehkonen in terms of deployment at some point from here on out. But there's always a chance that, you know, if they do move things around, that Lehkonen actually gets a better player to play with Nichushkin returning, you know, whether that's by virtue of Rantanen getting moved to the second line and Lehkonen playing on second line with Rantanen, or if it's just by virtue of Nichushkin and Lehkonen playing together on a second line at some point in the rest of the season. There's definitely a positive way you could spin this as well. Basically, I guess if I am, you know, handicapping it moving forward, you see Lehkonen has 4 points his last five. He's been skating over 19 minutes a night. I still think he's going to get a ton of minutes. They do play the absolute crap out of the top six there. He's on a 27 goal, 58 point pace in the 24 games that he's played so far this year. I kind of feel like that is probably about where he's likely to live, but he's just going to be one of these guys when he's in on the top line and on the top power play, you're loving life. He's going to be ripping points for you. But when he's not, you're going to be wondering, man, should I really be hanging on to this guy? He's on the second line, second power play. And you're just going to have to kind of ride those waves with Arturi Lehkonen. And if you're not comfortable to do that, then perhaps this is a player that you shouldn't be rostering. You should be trying to potentially move off of. So that's my take there. We got lots of people in here. We got Jackson. Hope you're feeling better. Here's the full message. Ready to get to biz. Let's go. Absolutely. Steve's in here. What's going on, Nate? Work your magic. What's going on with Durzi? Yeah, we can talk some Sean Durzi. We got Omega in here saying pitter patter. Let's get at our lost ones. How's it going, Goat? Thank you all for joining me here. This is going to be a good one for sure. So let's talk about Sean Durzi. As Steve was asking for there, we can start there with a comment. And Sean Durzi, just 2 assists his last 5 games, been skating 23 minutes a night, 68th amongst defensemen in shots per 60, 13th in individual scoring chances for per 60, though, in this 5-game stretch, so that's obviously a good mark. 81st in Corsi 4 per 60, 46th in scoring chances for per 60. On the season, Durzi's pacing for 13 goals, 48 points. Underlying metrics on the season are like not that impressive, to be quite frank. Overall, he's got an 8.8% shooting percentage on the season, which is probably a touch high, but 12.5% on ice shooting percentage, also probably a touch high. Yeah, it's tough to really be excited about Dursey's prospects rest of season. I actually projected him quite low, and I was kind of surprised at how low he came out in my projections at the beginning of the season. It does seem like he's regressing back a little bit, as kind of the team there in Arizona has regressed back a little bit. They've yeah, just had a lot tougher time generating offense as of late, and so it's just been just been less opportunity for Dursey to get in on some points. So I do think that you should probably, if you were perceiving Sean Dursey as a 50-plus point defenseman, I think you should probably adjust your expectations to more in that 45-ish point range rest of season. So that's my current take on Sean Dursey, just the way that the season is going for the Coyotes at this point. Now you have Keller with a day-to-day injury. I don't think there was any major updates. It will take a few days, really, was all that was said today by Coach Andre Tourigny. So yeah, I don't have a strong sense of what that really means, but it sounds like he's definitely gonna miss the Canadiens game against the Canadiens tomorrow night. If Keller's not working, then Dursey loses obviously his best player on the Coyotes in terms of getting more offense going. So that hurts him a little bit as well. Hopefully that's just a short-term thing and he can get back into the lineup. But yeah, I can't say that I'm super excited about Dursey's prospects rest of season. Maybe there's an opportunity to explore a trade if other people in your league still view him as somebody who's likely to score 50 plus points rest of season, then definitely I'd be okay with looking at a potential trade there. Usman Barak says, what are we thinking about Bertuzzi? He's been top power play over Tavares the last few games. Leafs power play has been red hot. A piece of that could be good. Yeah, I've picked up Bertuzzi actually in a couple of spots for this week. And I do think that it's a solid place to potentially get into that if a guy like Bertuzzi can fit into your lineup. First of all, that's always important. For some reason, it's not populating in my sheet here with Todd Bertuzzi, but he's definitely been doing pretty well last little bit. He had the hat trick. He struggled definitely on the year, but the last little bit has been quite good. He had the hat trick in the last game, four shots on goal, had a hit, he even had three blocks. He definitely had a good stretch there. Played almost 18 minutes, which is not, that's kind of a crucial part, honestly, with Bertuzzi, and really getting that power play one deployment has been what's really elevated him there. So I am interested in Bertuzzi, at least as long as he's on power play one. I don't know if he's gonna support, holding him beyond that, but as long as he remains on power play one, I'm interested in Todd Bertuzzi. Steve has thoughts on John Carlson. Yeah, John Carlson has been a tough one for sure as well. On the season, has definitely not lived up to what I thought he could be this year. He's got three assists his last five games. I actually did note in the game that's going on currently, he does have a goal. I believe. Let me double check. I'll fact check myself live here. Great podcasting. Yes, he does have a goal in the game here tonight, so that's nice. But prior to this, three assists in his last five games, still skating an incredible amount of minutes, 28 plus on average over those five games. The shots and the individual scoring chances have really gone away the last month maybe or so for John Carlson. That's the most concerning aspect of this to me. Like, that he's gonna skate an incredible amount of minutes. He's gonna be on the top power play with Ovechkin going again. You think that he can get in on some of those points. But what's really concerning is just John Carlson has typically throughout his career been a really strong shot and chance generator. And it seems like that's starting to go away for whatever reason. Maybe it's, he's wearing down with the incredible amount of minutes that he's been playing. Maybe he's finally wearing down. Maybe he's dealing with something underlying that we don't know about. There could be different factors, obviously, at play here. Overall, he's on pace for 4 goals, 47 points on the season. I still think he's probably do a little better than that. He's only got a 9.3% on ice shooting percentage. He's typically done better than that in his career, 48% IPP. It's Relatively high mark for a defenseman, but if anybody can hold on to that, it's a guy with the pedigree like John Carlson. 2.6% shooting percentage is definitely low for Carlson. He's been more of a 6% shooter in that range throughout his career, so he should, by rights, probably have somewhere closer to 8 goals on the season than 4, or pacing for 8 goals rather than 4. So I do think that Carlson probably has some positive regression coming to him in that kind of arena, but overall it's hard to be super excited about Carlson when he's just not doing it for himself under the hood. He's just not generating shots and scoring chances the way that he has throughout his career, and that's been kind of a bit more of a trend, I would say. You know, if it was just a 5-game stretch here or there, that would be less concerning to me, but the fact that it's become a bit of a trend is definitely more concerning to me than otherwise. Ricky S, is Kopitar a drop at this point in the season to utilize a streamer spot? Shots are down. Point pace seems unusually low. We can throw Kopitar in for sure. He's got a goal, 2 points, or 2 assists rather, for 3 points in his last 5 games. Still skating 20 minutes a night. He's never had good underlying metrics in terms of the shots or the scoring chances, but pretty atrocious the last little bit. 378th in shots per 60, 354th in individual scoring chances for per 60. On ice numbers, not a whole lot better. 136th in Corsi for per 60, 190th in scoring chances for per 60. I actually kind of think Quentin Byfield was maybe holding up Anze Kopitar a little bit, as weird as that sounds to say. On the season, 25 goals, 67 point pace. On the season, is shots per 60 and individual scoring chances for per 60 ranks are in the 400s. It's been pretty atrocious. He's kind of gotten there this season on the back of a 17.7% shooting percentage, which is definitely high. It's not something that he's typically done throughout his career. I don't want to say that he can't necessarily sustain, you know, pretty high shooting percentage for one more year, but the fact that they're moving stuff around now, Alex Laferriere is one of his line mates along with Kempe at even strength. That's a problem for me, because Laferriere is serviceable NHL player for sure, but he's definitely no Quentin Byfield. You would rather, obviously, for Kopitar's fantasy prospects, have somebody on that line that you feel a lot more confident in supplying some offense. So overall, I wouldn't be opposed necessarily. Obviously, depends on your league, your settings. In shallower leagues, like 10-team leagues, I think Kopitar is right on that edge in a lot of spots on not being worth rostering anymore, especially as a C only. In 12-team leagues or deeper, he's probably still worth keeping around, but he's definitely starting to tread that line a lot more than you would have thought, definitely at the beginning of the season. Steve was asking, who do you prefer better between Carlson or Durzi? I would take Carlson. I just think the ceiling there is higher. We've seen it for so many years. You know, maybe this is kind of getting towards the end of the road for Carlson, and he's just kind of aging out a little bit, but I just feel like he knows how to get it done, even if he doesn't have, you know, like the dynamism in his legs that he once had or something like that. He's still obviously a veteran who knows how to get it done, and I do feel like we probably haven't seen the best stretch of his season yet. So I do feel like if I had to choose between the two, I would take Carlson. Lastly here, before we jump back into the list, Random Reviews asked, trade Faber for Carlson. That's an interesting one. We'll talk about Brock Faber here in a second, and I'll give some more thoughts on Faber. I think I would take Carlson over Faber rest of season, especially if Washington's playoff schedule really helps you out in any, you know, perceivable way relative to Minnesota's, which is not as good in most setups. So obviously check your settings, check when your playoffs are and all the rest. But I honestly think in most cases I would trade Brock Faber for John Carlson. All right, let's get back to it. Let's talk about Andrei Svechnikov. Goal, 4 points in his last 5, 18 minutes average time on ice. Shots per 60 down to 330th, 229th in individual scoring chances for per 60. On ice numbers, pretty hard to get really bad over there in Carolina. 58th in Corsi for per 60, 47th in scoring chances for per 60. Svechnikov on the season, 27 goals, 75 point pace. And honestly, this season, he's actually kind of taken a bit of a dip in terms of his underlying metrics. Typically, he's been higher in terms of his individual generation. He's kind of just floated with a better shooting percentage than he's ever had before. On-ice shooting percentage has remained strong. The IPP has remained strong, and that's kind of how he's got to this 75-point pace. I'm finding it hard to be super bullish, honestly, on Svechnikov. And we all know RBA loves to change lines around. There's a chance that you get to your fantasy playoffs and Svechnikov is off the top power play for no apparent reason. That's maybe not the most likely scenario, but it is a scenario that can happen, and it's not a scenario that you envision being possible for, say, like Matt Boldy or some of these other people who might be in this kind of same tier as Andrei Svechnikov. So that's kind of my take on Svechnikov is, yeah, he's great, and I mean, like Banger Cats, where he's providing you all those hits, he's definitely valuable there, but I do have just that kind of like nagging worry with Svechnikov if I'm rostering him somewhere that, what happens if RBA gets mad at him the 1 week where I really need Svechnikov in my fantasy playoffs, then I might be just kind of out of luck, and that would be a tough spot to be. So, I would consider trading Svechnikov. It would have to be the right deal where I'm actually getting, a really solid playoff schedule, a player of pretty much equal value in my league, but I would consider it. And that's not something I would typically consider for a player like Svechnikov, a player of that caliber, kind of like a core player on my roster. But just because of that situation and being, maybe once burnt, twice shy by Rod Brind'Amour, that could be a case where I would actually consider moving off. Tyler says, I traded Faber for Montour right before his pop-off. Thanks to you, the goat comes through again. I'm glad to hear that, Tyler. That's going to be a good one for you. I feel pretty confident about that. Montour's teammate is up next, Sam Bennett. In his last five games here, he's got 5 points, 2 goals, 5 points for Bennett. In the last little bit, Bennett is obviously an interesting player. He kind of does this where he has the hot stretches. Like, I mean, 4 of those 5 points all came in one game, right? But to be fair to Bennett, he's also got 3 shots, 2 shots, 7 shots, 5 shots in his last 4 games here. He definitely got more ice time the last 2 games where the Panthers had some injury problems. Tkachuk obviously came out of the game, and Bennett ended up playing more minutes. Bennett is definitely the guy. He's going to hit, he's going to block, he's going to do all those things that we love. And definitely, like the shots per 60, you can see on the screen here, 20th in shots per 60, 7th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60 the last 5 games. Any scenario in which Bennett is getting 19 plus minutes a night, he's definitely going to be very worthwhile. But that's just not his typical fare. Normally, he's more in that 15-minute range. And so, yeah, you just got to kind of take the good with the bad there. He's definitely going to have big nights, even playing lower minutes, just because of how good Florida is and how good his line mates are. Typically, he's been playing with Tkachuk all season long, and I don't anticipate there's really a strong reason that that might not continue moving forward. So I would say that Bennett is probably just solid rest of the season, but perhaps uninspiring depending on your league. If you don't get any help from his hits or his blocks, then he might not be that valuable in your specific league. If it's like a points only setup or something like that, definitely his value goes way down in a league like that. And so, yeah, you're just kind of left with a guy who might leave you wanting 4 stretches just by virtue of the fact that he's not playing a ton of minutes. And even if he is getting shots and hits, it's easier for the variance to go against him just by virtue of the fact that he doesn't play an absolute boatload of minutes like the top guys in Florida do. So, Bennett, kind of a peripheral edges of your lineup kind of player. In some leagues, he might be more of a streamer. In a little bit deeper leagues, he's probably just slightly better than a streamer. But that's about where Sam Bennett lives. He's a player that I've always liked. I always like that he's given me something pretty much every night, some shots, some hits, some blocks, something for my teams. So I've been hanging on to Sam Bennett in the places where I've got him pretty much all season. And honestly, I'm not likely to move off that. But depending on your league, I could definitely see it. He is definitely a little bit more of a fringe roster player. We got another question in here in the comments. Uyghur or Pietrangelo? For me, this is pretty clearly Uyghur at the moment. He's just been Generating a ton. Clearly has settled in there in Calgary this year and really started to make the best of the situation. Even with the Flames themselves not doing terrific, Uyghur has been pretty terrific. So the last game he did, they did play around again with power play units. Hannifin Anderson was a power play unit along with Huberto and Zeri and Backlund, and that unit played a bunch. It was kind of a weird setup. I'm not sure how much I would want to read into that because I do think they'll move stuff around again. But regardless, Uyghur, like, he hits and blocks so much and he's shooting so much this year that I just think he's got such a terrific floor. And if he ever got power play one on top of all that, he would be absolutely terrific in any setup. So I think I will take Uyghur there. Matthew Moreau, Jesper and Bratt in particular, and Devils in general, rest of season, 20-minute treatment during the playoffs push. So let me throw Jesper Bratt in the sheet here. He's only got one goal, one assist, 2 points since last five, still averaging over 19 minutes a night. Shots per 60, 40th. Individual scoring chances for 55th. 13th in Corsi, 4 per 60. 23rd in scoring chances, 4 per 60. On the season, pacing for 30 goals, 83 points. I've kind of got very little concerns with Jesper Bratt rest of season. He's just, in my mind, established himself as, like, entrenched himself as one of the absolute top players on that team. He's going to get all the top power play time. You know, whenever they pull the goalie, Jesper Bratt is absolutely going to be out there. That's really what's contributed to his step this year, is getting up into that 19 minute range where previously he'd been more around 17 and a half minutes the previous two seasons. And also he's taken a step in terms of his shot generation and his scoring chance generation. So we love to see that for sure. And that gives us really good hope that this is a really sustainable level that he's hit here. And honestly, like, the shooting percentage at 11.4, he's done better than that in multiple seasons, most of his seasons, honestly, in the NHL. So he could definitely do better than that. And I wouldn't be shocked. He's done better than this 66% IPP. He could definitely eclipse that again. And nice shooting percentage is the highest mark, I should say, of his career. So that part might counterbalance things a little bit, but I feel like point per game is the floor for Jesper Bratt moving forward. I'm not concerned in the slightest about this latest little slump. Dirty Deed 5, Nate the Great, should we continue holding Slavkovsky? This is a really interesting one. Slavkovsky was dropped in a bunch of my leagues after he went through a pretty tough stretch the last three games where just all of the point scoring, all of the goodwill, it felt like that Slavkovsky had been building up just immediately went out the window as soon as he had three subpar games. One shot in each of those three games, despite skating a minimum of 21 minutes in each one. Still had a hit in each game, had two blocks across those three games, so he's still providing something of value there. But yeah, it's a tough spot. I mean, I kind of didn't think that Slavkovsky was just gonna absolutely go off for the rest of the season, so I can't say I'm like super surprised overall. But I mean, anyone skating 21 minutes a night is gonna be pretty valuable in most 12 team and up formats, I would like to say. Just because Montreal didn't have a great schedule this week and there were a lot of teams that had better schedules, I didn't end up, you know, putting in a claim for Slavkovsky or, trying to pick him up anywhere where he was dropped in my leagues. But I do think overall, like, if you're making bets, for sure bet on the guy who is skating 21 plus minutes a night and has, every ounce of runway possible from his team. They want to see him succeed. They want him to play on the top line, top power play, and help him build up his confidence moving forward so he can be a cornerstone part of that organization. Those are the kind of bets you probably want to make, right? And now that we've gotten this kind of proof of concept where he had a pretty solid little stretch there where he was super valuable, he was chucking pucks, doing all the things we like to see, you know, maybe that's an aberration in the long term here, that kind of like seven game stretch where he was really cooking. Maybe that is an aberration in the long term, but it's a bet that I'm willing to make overall. So if it makes sense for your team, if it makes sense to pick him up and you can actually fit him in for the games that Montreal's playing, etc., then yeah, I'm comfortable taking that pickup on Slavkovsky and just kind of seeing where it goes, because basically, if he plays really well, it's going to be multiplied by 21 minutes a night. And if he plays just okay, it's still going to be multiplied by 21 minutes a night. So it'll still be of some value. And then if he plays poorly, I mean, You can just drop him back to the waiver wire, as probably other people in your league have already done. All right, let's get back into it. Tyson Forster has had an interesting little stretch as of late. Definitely took advantage of the... He came back for the two games that Travis Konecny missed over the weekend, and he had a very nice stretch. 3 goals in those two games and an assist, 7 shots, 3 hits, and a block across those two games. Averaged over 20 minutes a night between those two games, that back-to-back on the weekend. So yeah, really, really strong stuff. Forster has done this, and he does have some pedigree. This is a strong prospect, player that a lot of people were excited about. And he's had some stretches earlier on in the season where he's done similar things as well. And that obviously gives you some interest in as to what he might be able to do moving forward. Overall, it is tough for me to say that I'm like over the moon about Tyson Forster. And really, it does just come down to the Tortorella effect there. I just don't know what Tortorella is going to do with this guy as soon as, you know, he makes a giveaway in the neutral zone and the puck ends up in the back of the Philadelphia net. It could just be right back down to the fourth line for Tyson Forster. At the moment, sure, you know, if you've got openings in your roster, Forster makes for a solid stream in that regard. I definitely think this is a player with a bright future. So yeah, if you're in a dynasty format or a deep keeper format or something, then I'd be interested in acquiring him there. I do think that he's shown some really strong things at points throughout this season, and that's really promising for his future. But as far as this season goes, yeah, an immediate stream while he's getting this current deployment, but it could be over as soon as the very next game. So I wouldn't be going out and investing a huge amount into Tyson Forster and thinking that he's going to save my season. All right, next up, Mika Zibanejad, 2 goals, 3 points, his last 5, averaging over 22 minutes a night, 85th in shots per 60, but only 209th in individual scoring chances 4 per 60, 48th in on-ice Corsi 4 per 60, 54th in scoring chances 4 per 60. On the season, a 27-goal, 76-point pace, definitely the goals down this year from what we typically see from Zibanejad. And also, yeah, the individual scoring chances 4 per 60 this year for Zibanejad has not been good. Like, it's been actually bad. don't hesitate to say that. And that's kind of concerning for me. I mean, Zibanejad is not a spring chicken anymore in this league. So, like, it's possible that he's just got a little bit earlier age-related decline. I don't know if that's the most likely reason for the kind of down metrics this year, but it's at least in the back of my mind that that could be a contributing factor. Yeah, 6.24 individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. He hasn't had a mark like that in 5 years. So that's definitely a low watermark for Zibanejad. 7.6 shots per 60. You got to go back all the way to 2016-17, his first year with the Rangers, to see a lower shots per 60 than that. So, yeah, it's definitely a concerning turn of events. I do think he's probably gotten a little light on the IPP this year, but maybe a little hot on the on-ice shooting percentage. Maybe that comes out in the wash. The individual shooting percentage is right in line. So overall, I don't think that Zibanejad actually deserves much better than this. I'm fairly concerned with Zibanejad overall. It's nice that the shots per 60 have come up a little bit as of late, but the scoring chances are still so far down, and that's pretty concerning to me. Obviously, he's going to get a ton of minutes, and so that's going to be helpful. Anybody playing a ton of minutes, playing top power play with Panarin, the way Panarin's been playing this year, he's going to run into points. I don't think there's any danger of Zibanejad like going to zero, but, you know, he's been like a 85, 90 point player in recent years, and I don't think we're getting that version of Zibanejad the rest of the season. Another player in kind of a similar scenario, all things told, is Steven Stamkos. He's got 0 points his last 5 games. Actually, it might even go back further than that. I'm not sure. I'd have to check. I do have Steven Stamkos in Kekupfel, so I've been feeling the weight of this pointless streak. It is 5 games that he's been pointless. The minutes have been down. 1605 on average. That's actually being buoyed. He had one game at 1844. He has a 1336 game. That was in that game against Florida that they absolutely got whitewashed 9-2. So you can probably throw that out a little bit as an aberration, but still, this is not an average time on ice that you want to see for your player that you picked in the third round this year. 116th in shots per 60, 98th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. That's about where Stamkos lives at this stage of his career, so I'm not too concerned about that. What I am concerned about is the on-ice numbers. 206th in on-ice Corsi, 4 per 60, 185th in scoring chances, 4 per 60. That's not what you want to see from... yeah, from your guy that you picked in the third round. Like, you're expecting Stamkos to be a really consistent performer. And yeah, he's not getting power play points. He's not doing much of anything. He's playing with Connor Sheary and Nick Paul at even strength. And that's, like, it's just not good enough this year for the Lightning. It does kind of feel a little bit like their lack of offensive depth has come home to roost a little bit on the season. So yeah. On the season, his numbers do look better, so you could hold out some hope that this latest stretch is a little bit of an aberration. He's still on pace for 33 goals, 72 points, 60% IPP, 13.2% shooting percentage, 13% on ice shooting percentage. Most of that feels fairly in line. I do feel like Stamkos is probably at least should be living in that 35 goal, 75 point range at this point, but I am concerned about the fact that really they're loading up a top line with the way Brandon Hagel's been playing. He's been absolutely incendiary as of late. Him playing up there with Kucherov and Point, and then Stamkos is just kind of getting the dregs in terms of the other players that they have to throw out there in the forward core in Tampa. So, I do have some concern that there might be a floor here with Stamkos that was heretofore unplumbed. So, I have some concern there, but I mean, I'm just going to bet on the talent in most of these cases. I'm not going to sell them low, so I don't really think there's a strong takeaway, just perhaps some adjusted expectations for Stamkos. Tyler asks, what should I do with Pedersen? He only has 2 games the first week of my playoffs, but 3 with 3 off nights championship week. Do I try to move him for someone with a better schedule overall? You can. I guess what I would want to kind of evaluate for myself is, you know, if the rest of my team, the rest of my like core players, my non-streamers, all play like 4 games that first week, then it probably doesn't matter that Pedersen only has 2 games. And then I'm just pretty excited that he has the 3 off nights, the championship week, obviously, if you get there. So I'd look through kind of the rest of the lineup and then kind of make my potential decision on whether I want to investigate even a trade at that point. So that's probably the way that I would look at it. See if, you know, if you got, you know, 6 other core players who all play 4 games that week, you're probably not that worried about the fact that Pedersen only has 2. So kind of look through your lineup and make that assessment for yourself that way. Jackson, hey Nate, I meant what's up before. Oops, I'm pushing for a dub in a keep 4 keeper league with Cats. Goals, assists, points, power play points, shots on goal, hits. Would be giving a first plus Lauzon and Tippett, 4 Verhage plus Uyghur and a 5th. First plus Lauzon and Tippett, 4 Verhage plus Uyghur and a 5th. Overall, yeah, I think I'm into that. Obviously, you're giving up a fair amount of hits there with Lauzon and Tippett. Uyghur probably keeps pace, not with Lauzon, because Lauzon you can't be kept pace with in terms of hits this year. He's been an absolute bender in terms of throwing the body around. So Uyghur definitely helps, but you are definitely losing some hits there. If you got a lot of hits elsewhere, maybe that doesn't really matter to you. But the upgrade to Verhage is significant in my mind, and the upgrade in terms of point scoring from Uyghur is also significant from Lauzon. So overall, I'm not mad at it. I would, you know, obviously I would try to perhaps give a second instead of the first, but I don't think I think that's a pretty solid trade overall, especially if you've got plenty of hits on the rest of your lineup. And you just said, I'm good on hits, so not a big deal. There you go. All right. Tyler says, going back to the question about Pedersen with the 2 games, the first week of playoffs, also has Matthews at 2 games that week, already traded Josi for Trocheck because of that week. So if you got 2 of your studs with only 2 games that week, then maybe that's a little bit more incentive to get a deal done. But really, I'm not in the business of trading my absolute studs like Pedersen, like Matthews, for just kind of run-of-the-mill players unless they I'm absolutely getting full value. So if you can't get full value, if you can't get an absolute haul for these players, then I'm just going to bet on them to outperform in those two games. And you know what? More often than not, they've shown us that they're fully capable of that. I just don't want to be in a position where, you know, maybe it did help me marginally in that week where, you know, I traded them for somebody a tier down. That person a tier down played four games that week, and so they scored like two extra fantasy points, and that theoretically helped me. But in the end, when all the chips were down, I still would have rather had my Pettersson or my Matthews. So I would explore any trade options if you can get full value, if you can trade, you know, equivalently, like across the tier, like if you can trade Pettersson for Rantanen or something like that, where it's just kind of an evenish trade. Maybe you have to add some pieces on either side to make it look a little bit more palatable to the person you're trading for. But if you can get kind of like an even trade where you actually do kind of switch around your games played for playoffs, you know, maybe that's an avenue to explore. But overall, I'm just not in the business of trading away my studs for anything less than full value. Nate, what do you think is up with Paterka? He's more of a back-end roster piece for me, but he's been so good without good deployment. Worth stashing, or am I being a season too early? The most likely answer is that we're a season too early on Paterka. You know, Skinner, it looks like, is going to miss some games here, so maybe there's a chance that we get a little bit more burn for Paterka in terms of the ice time. Maybe he gets up on, you know, the top power play unit at some point. That's possible, I guess. Most likely, I think it would be Mittelstadt who would take that spot. And so, yeah, Paterka, I think, is a terrific player, really coming into his own this year, but probably we're a year away from him really fulfilling some more of that promise. I think, yeah, he's more of a streamer level player for me rest of season. All right, let's get back to it. We've got to get through the list. We got to talk about Brock Faber. So Blake and I did talk about Brock Faber yesterday. We kind of talked about him in the context of some other defensemen, tried to do a little kind of mini ranking of those defensemen. I am pretty concerned, honestly, about Brock Faber at this point. I don't think he's like a massive offensive generator. I do have concerns that, you know, he's a rookie player who's playing an absolute incredible amount of minutes this year and is not used to even just the length of the NHL season, let alone those kind of minutes. So I do have a lot of concerns that Faber might be hitting a wall here. He's only got 1 point in his last five. And so, yeah, like the trade Faber for Carlson, you know, maybe Carlson's ceiling isn't as high as we had hoped at the beginning of this year, but I do think Carlson is a much better, much safer bet for some points rest of season, has a better playoff schedule. That's the kind of move that I would be exploring with Faber at this point. I mean, Faber is a guy that you picked up. If you have him, you picked him up off of waivers at some point in the season, so you had him for free. And so getting something that's a little bit more safe, I talk about this a little bit. If you're, you know, in a buy position or something like that, and you've got some of these guys that you're just not sure how the rest of the season is going to play out for them, then I am totally fine with moving off them for the boring veteran player who's a little bit more safe and who's going to, I feel really confident, is going to show up for me in my fantasy playoffs. So that's where I'm at on Brock Faber. Rupe Hintz, just one assist his last five games. Another player that we've been talking about a fair bit because of this kind of cold stretch. He's up to just over 18 and a half minutes average time on ice on the season. That's actually been lower. He's only at 17:15 average time on ice on the season. Pacing for 33 goals, 72 points. The shots are down this year. It's been a bit of a concerning season for Rupe Hintz, and I'm less confident in Hintz really kind of having some massive turnaround. They're spreading out the ice time more, maybe not in this latest stretch, but he's not been able to do anything with the little bit of extra ice time that he's gotten the last five games here. I am concerned. The shots per 60 is atrocious. 337th in shots per 60 the last five games, 271st in individual scoring chances for per 60, on ice numbers in the mid 100s. Not good numbers from Rupe Hintz as of late. Yeah, there could be an underlying thing going on there that we're not aware of, that's pure speculation, but overall it's just a concerning trend for Rupe Hintz. And so I don't know if you can trade him at full value or get back what you invested into him, but I am concerned about Hintz. I'm not gonna go sell him for pennies, but I would potentially be exploring trade options, and I'm certainly not looking to acquire him low at the moment. All right, Nico Dawes was requested, kind of just the jersey net in general. So obviously we've had a Vanecek injury. Dawes has gotten a lot of run, and it's been very up and down for Nico Dawes. I just think that Dawes is showing us a little bit this year that he's not it. Maybe he is at some point yet. He's still relatively young, but I mean, he's got an 895 on the season. I am just not convinced that anybody on the Devils roster right now is their goalie for the playoff run. I do think they're going to be pretty active, whether it's, you know, an Elvis Merzlikins or any number of these goalies that have been rumored to be on the trade market. I think the Devils are going to be one of the top suitors for a goalie there. And so I'm just not excited about any of the Devils goaltending options right now. They're not much more than, you know, a week-long stream or something like that in a week where I'm confident I'm going to get a couple starts out of them. So that's about where I've got everybody in the Devils net, and I would be pretty excited if they do go out. Like, if they go out and add Merzlikins, I would be super excited about Merzlikins moving forward, because I do think Merzlikins is actually a pretty solid goaltender, maybe a streaky goaltender in some cases, a little bit of a roller coaster ride from game to game, but I'd love to see and play in a semi-decent natural environment and see what he could do. So that's my take on the New Jersey net at the moment. Next up, Quinton Byfield, 1 goal, 3 points his last 5, skating over 18 minutes a night, which is about as good as you can hope for over in LA at the moment. 223rd in shots per 60, but 141st in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, a little better, respectable at least. 107th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 146th in on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60 is Quinton Byfield. He's been playing on that line with PLD. The last game, they put Arthur Kaliev there with them. You know, it's fine enough. I think I'd rather have him getting some exposure to either Kempe or Fiala as the other two best offensive players on the team, in my opinion. But overall, you know, it could be worse than playing with those guys. So I'm not too mad at it. I think that Byfield is really talented. I'm not convinced that they're going to give him enough ice time with the correct players for it to really be like an absolutely needle moving performance rest of season. I think Byfield is maybe a little bit better than a streamer in most leagues, most 12 team leagues at the moment, but I am still watching. If his deployment goes down, if he starts to play, you know, down the lineup a little bit, I wouldn't hesitate to drop Quinton Byfield. This is the time of year where I'm pretty ruthless, even on players that I really like. I like the underlyings on Byfield, but I'm not going to wait around for him to, you know, get back to perfect deployment and really start moving the needle for me. I'm not convinced that Byfield at any point in the rest of the season is going to like win or lose a matchup for me. And that's kind of the bar that I'm setting for players now for whether I absolutely have to hang on to them rest of season. Sam Reinhart coming up on this list. He's got just 3 assists in his last 5 games. Obviously has scored a boatload of goals this year, still averaging 20 minutes a night, down to 163rd in shots per 60, 87th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. On ice numbers, not that great either. 96th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 102nd in on ice scoring chances, 4 per 60. I kind of just feel like this was always coming for Sam Reinhart. Definitely he's had a terrific season. They found something that really works on the power play with him as kind of a trigger man from that bumper spot, and it's just worked all season long. No one's really been able to figure out that power play and kind of shut him down. So maybe they are figuring it out now. Maybe that's part of it. But overall, like, a 55 goal, 95 point pace on the season, 25% shooting percentage. Like, he's still got lots of regression to come. If he is going to experience that this year, he may not. He may keep up a really outlandish shooting percentage rest of the season, but 25% is just stratospheric. That was always going to come down. I don't think that's indicative of the player that Sam Reinhart is. He is an efficient shooter, but no one is a 25% level efficient shooter. You know, you get the odd outlier season where a player will hit that, but definitely it's not something you see every year in the league. Question in the chat, last ones. Pinto the guy to grab over Batherson and Norris. I was checking the score there. The Senators have scored 3 goals through 2 periods, and Pinto has 3 points. So he's factored in on all three goals, which feels pretty good after I talked him up in the episode yesterday. Yeah, honestly, it's hard to hate on Pinto over Batherson or Norris at the moment. He's definitely been doing the thing in terms of the underlying stats. As of late, he's been playing with Brady Tkachuk at even strength and on the power play. You know, in the game so far, he's got more minutes than Batherson, getting more power play time than him in this game. Same with Norris. So, yeah, I don't hate it. It might be a situation where he runs out of gas at some point. I don't know for sure if this is like the player I expect Pinto to be rest of season, but he's clearly feeling it at the moment. If you're just looking for, you know, a week long stream or just kind of riding with him until the wheels fall off a little bit, then yeah, he's definitely the player who's hot right now. Thomas Chabot, a defenseman for the Ottawa Senators, has 3 goals, 5 points in his last 5, averaging 22.5 minutes a night. Just going to check. No, he does not have any points on the 3 goals the Sens have scored so far tonight. Still a period to play there, of course, as well. They've been doing some stuff with those power play units, and overall, like, Chabot just never really impresses. Like, for him to get to this 5 points in 5 games, he's had to shoot 37.5%, and he's got to have a 71% IPP. I just don't think that's something we can reasonably expect from him. He has actually had pretty good shot marks on the season, 22nd in shots per 60 while skating 24 minutes a night on the season. That's pretty solid. The on-ice numbers have been pretty solid. Statistically, is one of the better seasons of Thomas Chabot's career. But does seem like they're really grooming Jake Sanderson to be the guy there. And yeah, I'm kind of ambivalent on Chabot. I don't think this is a player that's going to really, you know, as I like to say, win you your league or win you your matchup in any given week. He's had a nice hot stretch here, and that's probably all it is. He's on pace now for 12 goals, 52 points on the season. That feels about right, in my opinion. He's got a low IPP. It's not even that low, 38%, maybe a touch low, but the 11.7% on ice shooting percentage might be a touch high, so that probably just balances each other out. I think that, yeah, this is probably the player that Chabot is around that 50, 55 point pace, depending on the week. You know, he's getting more power play time this week than last week. He might get an extra point that week, something along those lines. But Chabot just kind of is what he is to me. I don't think there's an exciting ceiling here. You know, he's more of a probably third defenseman on your roster in a 12-team league. All right, we've got a couple of goalie situations to end things off on. There is potentially a brewing situation in my mind between Philip Grubauer and Joey Decord in Seattle. And I know it's not something that Joey Decord managers like myself want to hear, but Philip Grubauer getting another start here. He did have a couple of starts. This will be, what, the third straight start? This is concerning if you're a Joey Decord roster for sure. You know, maybe you do want to rush out and grab a Philip Grubauer. And yeah, I have loved what Joey Decord's been able to do for me this season. I think he's a halfway decent goaltender, but I have no allegiance to the goalies that I pick up. And if Grubauer is going to be the guy, if they're going to ride with him, then absolutely I will flip-flop. I kind of want to see how this game against Boston goes. It's a tough matchup. If Boston lights him up, then it'll be right back to Decord, I think, the next game. Definitely either way, I think the time that we had with Joey Decord as the massive volume starter is clearly in the past, and I think they're going to try a little bit more of a timeshare. It may or may not work out. Like, Grubauer has not been good really at any point for an extended stretch in his time in Seattle, and so he could easily kind of give up the ghost here, and it could be right back to Decord if Grubauer can't figure it out. But in the immediate future, which is pretty much all you should care about, in my opinion, when it comes to goalies, I think this is going to be a fairly even time split, and potentially they might even give Grubauer a bit of run, just given how much hockey Decord has been forced to play over the last little while. Steve asks, Nate, assuming that LA doesn't trade for a goalie, how do you rank Riddick, Grubauer, and Decord rest of season? I like to ask people when they ask me questions about goalie, are you asking me to predict goalie performance? Because I don't like to do that. If I had to rank them, assuming that LA doesn't trade for a goalie, which I do feel is fairly likely, I mean, given the fact that they're going right to Grubauer right now, even though Decord hasn't played terribly, I might. I mean, Decord was chased from the game against Minnesota, so there is that. That's a bad start for sure. But yeah, I might go. This is really tough. I'm gonna go Grubauer, then Riddick, then Decord. That could change as early as tomorrow, but that's where I'm at right now, pending the results of this Boston game. So we will see how that goes. If Grubauer plays really well here, then yeah, you gotta assume that he's gonna get some more work moving forward. All right, the other tandem to talk about is the Aiden Hill Logan Thompson tandem. Definitely, I would say, there's really no statistical basis to say anything different. Logan Thompson has been outplayed this season by Aiden Hill Thompson. The last few starts, he had a shutout against San Jose. I mean, good for you. You had a shutout against San Jose. Then against Toronto, they got lit up in that game for 7 goals. And, it's kind of whatever, in my opinion. He came in relief of Aiden Hill and then give up more goals than Aiden Hill did in the end. That's a tough spot to put any goaltender in. Then he gave up 3 goals on 30 shots against Ottawa, which is an okay outing, kind of run of the mill. But I think Aiden Hill has kind of outplayed in Thompson on the season for sure. He's got a .927 save percentage. The last little bit has been a little bit wonky for Aiden Hill, but he is going to get another run at the Leafs tomorrow. He's slated to start in that game, so we'll see how that goes. Definitely, I could see it trend back. They ran this a little bit more like a tandem earlier, and this could definitely trend back to more of a tandem. But if I have to pick between the two, I'm definitely picking Aiden Hill. Overall, if you're kind of worried about what to do here, you should be worried if you're rostering both of these goalies, as the person who asked the question in the Discord server was. It's not a situation I ever want to be in where I'm rostering both goalies from a team. One exception might be I was actually looking at it this week because Ottawa has two back-to-backs this week, which basically nearly assures you that both goaltenders are going to get 2 starts each, right? One on each end of the two back-to-backs. Now, who knows what's going to happen because the Capitals chased Forsberg from this game, so who knows what's going to happen there. But regardless of that, that's like a 1 week situation where I'd consider it. I didn't end up doing it for myself anywhere, but I would consider it in that situation. Moving forward, I just think that you're really limiting your upside whenever you're rostering both goalies in a tandem. You want a situation where both goaltenders that you're rostering could really take over their net and, yeah, just provide you a lot of excess value at the position. That's kind of one of the main tenets of 0G. Just give yourself outs to finding a goaltender that can really help you instead of, just kind of exist on your roster. And your best case scenario, really, between Aiden Hill and Logan Thompson is that one vastly outplays the other and the other is rendered irrelevant and you feel good about dropping them. And that's just not a scenario where I want to be rostering a player and hoping that I'm feeling good about dropping them in another week. So that's the goaltender tandem theorem that I like to spout every once in a while. Overall, if I'm picking between the two, I am going to go with Aiden Hill. Maybe you want to wait and see how the Toronto game goes. If he does have a good game against Toronto on Tuesday night here, then maybe you're comfortable dropping Thompson. If he has a bad game, then maybe you're back to square one and you're rethinking things again. Overall, if I am rostering both goaltenders, I am looking for an out where I can drop one or even both of them if they continue to flounder. I do think Vegas is good enough that you should be excited to roster a Vegas goaltender, but you could be looking at some sort of Boston situation as well, where it's just a very evenly split 1A, 1B situation. So, tough spot to roster a goaltender from, and don't envy you that one, but that is how I would be playing it at the moment. All right. We made it all the way through the list. So that's going to be all that we've got for this episode. Hopefully it brought you some value, helped you get a little bit better at fantasy hockey today. All the advanced stats you heard today came from Natural Stat Trick, which is a terrific free resource. Many thanks to the band there for supplying the music for this podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify as well. That's it, folks. Much love.